Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
The Bernstein and McKnight Show.
Here we go.
This is the game. Up the middle, the pass to the end zone. Knocked down by Breland. Incomplete. Denying Edelman. Denying the Patriots.
Middays on the Score.
Once again, we're asking the Patriots questions. We seem to do it every once in a while. It's doing it a little bit later in the season than we usually do. It was a wild day of football yesterday with some outcomes not necessarily helping the Bears
so much
passively, but they do need that help. Here to talk NFL with us is Eric Edholm of Yahoo Sports. He is on Twitter at Eric_Edholm. He is on the Alpamonte Ford Hotline. Alpamonte Ford in Melrose Park. What are your big takeaways from all that action you saw yesterday, Eric?
Yeah, no, I mean, it was pretty interesting, obviously, that Saints 49ers game was pretty high level football. I know there are a lot of points scored. I know both these teams have at times won with their defense. So, you know, we've seen the 49ers just so battle tested this season. I mean, they've been in big games. You know, they've blown some mediocre teams out. They've stood toe to toe with some really strong teams. I think it's fair to say we have to take them very seriously in the big picture. And the Saints, I don't think, are going away, but they're kind of third now in the conference and have some work to do. But, yeah, I think New England, Kansas City, and that game were the two that I think most people were kind of focused in on.
How do you separate the short-term issues with the Patriots versus the long-term issues with the Patriots?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, after the season, they've got crucial decisions. We'll put that to the side for a minute. It's going to probably depend slightly on what things, you know, transpire over the next month or so. And, you know, I'm sure everybody has reminded, you know, folks, hey, look, it was 1 year ago that New England lost that game down in Miami. They went to Pittsburgh, looked terrible. Even winning the last two regular season games didn't really look all that impressive. So, you know, there were plenty of folks saying they were going to lose that game to the Chargers in the postseason. Could that play out again? Sure. I mean, they rediscover their run game if, you know, we get some of those receivers start separating a little better. But, you know, the eye test, even with all those bad calls yesterday, and I understand, it was a terribly officiated game. Some calls went against the Chiefs. Some calls went against the Patriots. Some big ones. But it's not looking right now. And I think it's fair to criticize this team offensively and say it's going to hold them back. Just look at all the trick plays they're having to try. Yep. And just everything they're having to do to win a game or come close to winning a game.
Connor was talking about giving us a statistical nugget on Ryan Tannehill.
Yeah, and the Titans.
And the Titans.
Yeah.
That they're leading the entire NFL in yards per play. Which, I mean, that's the entire...
Since week seven.
Yes, which is basically your Ryan Tannehill numbers. I've got more numbers here. CBS says that since he's become the starter, Ryan Tannehill has a better rating than Drew Brees, more yards than Aaron Rodgers.
Whoa.
Yeah. More touchdowns than Tom Brady, fewer interceptions than Russell Wilson, and a better completion percentage than Lamar Jackson.
Whoa.
That is Ryan Tannehill. What's the significance of any of this?
That he could end up getting a contract that might blow some people's minds this offseason. And I'll be honest with you guys, I went back before Sunday. I was like, boy, have I been missing something with Tannehill? Like, he's played pretty well. I went back and watched big chunks of that, you know, that six-game span leading into Sunday, and I thought, he's been good. He's been fine. But yesterday, he looked like a, you know, playmaking, swashbuckling, you know, carry the team on my back kind of player. And look, other than a handful of games here or there in his Miami tenure, I never thought of him as that guy. So, again, it's one game plus a very solid stretch of play before that. How do we look at this? Now, compared to how Marcus Mariota played early in the season, he's blowing him out of the water. So that's the good news. The question is, you know, he's a free agent. They've got to make a huge decision here on what to pay him and how to kind of factor him in. Is he a bridge quarterback? Is he the savior? Is he something in between? I really don't know the answer to that, but the way he played yesterday, I'll tell you what, that was pretty darn impressive.
That's why in the context of the Bears, you look at it and you say, okay, is the lesson to be learned that the Bears could find a young-ish, once-on-the-come prospect and rescue? Or is the lesson to be learned that this could be Mitchell Trubisky and his next team?
That's exactly how I was going to phrase it. I think you set it up perfectly in the sense that, look, I know everybody, you know, is sort of gotten to the point with Mitch where they're like, all right, well, it hasn't happened yet. It's not going to happen. Tannehill is a pretty good example. He started, what, 5 years straight? I think he had a streak of 80 straight starts for the Dolphins before getting hurt or something like that, 64, whatever it was. I mean, he started for a long stretch of his career. He got thrown in there right away, wasn't ready. You know, Mitchell, we know, was thrown in, what, week five, week six of his rookie year. He wasn't ready then. Sort of held his own, and now he's been steeped in this system for a couple years. And I don't think you can just throw the bathwater out. That's a really tricky dilemma for the Bears, that there are players like Tannehill or Alex Smith or other guys who get it a little bit later down the road. The worst-case scenario would be the Bears moving on, getting somebody who's in that kind of Mariota, Teddy Bridgewater mold, and maybe they draft somebody too and try to figure out how they navigate it. And then you watch Trubisky go to the Carolina Panthers or whoever and start thriving. I mean, that would be the absolute worst situation for them to see unfold, where Trubisky figures it out on another team. It would be an indictment on Nagy. It would be an indictment on Pace. And it would show that the lack of patience really hurt them.
So the Bears obviously need to win out to give themselves the best chance possible. Yeah. They get Green Bay and Minnesota in weeks 15 and then 17. So at least you're playing the opponents you have to knock off on your way there. Still, the Rams are going to matter in that conversation. They have looked a hell of a lot better, especially given the way that Jared Goff was playing earlier on in the season. I'm amazed that they've sorted out their offensive line issues as best they have over the last couple of weeks. What else stands out to you about how the Rams have really turned things around?
Yeah, in addition to having to make these offensive line changes, the guys that they put in there, especially Bobby Evans, the rookie out of Oklahoma, you know, David Edwards, the kid from Wisconsin, they weren't the same style of blockers that they, you know, expected to have as their starters coming into the season. They're a little bit more of those power kind of guys. So they're having to run more kind of gap blocking stuff, more duo, more double team stuff there, and less of the outside stretch zone that was such a huge staple of what McVay's system was built on. What did he do? He rebuilt the system, or at least built in a couple of other elements to it that weren't there. And I thought that was pretty stark and obvious in that Bears game, was that they were getting away from some of the stuff that was their bread and butter, and creating a new norm based on the personnel they had in there. I think that's the measure of a really good coach, and Sean McVay has taken his share of lumps this season, but I think we have to respect the fact that he's identified that, look, I don't have the same team that I had at the beginning of the season, or I thought I was going to have. Now, let's play to the strengths of what we have, and let's try to minimize the weaknesses of the players who are in there. And guess what? It's worked out. You know, Robert Woods is back, and Gurley's running better, and Goff is throwing with more confidence. Tyler Higbee has come out of nowhere to become a really good tight end. So, you know, another example of a player who, you know, didn't start the season at all on the radar as a playmaker, and now Higbee's become kind of a staple in that offense.
I know you are specializing now also in the NFL draft, the upcoming draft, and looking at prospects. So the question is, in your role, now that you've had a full season to look over some of these guys, and you talk to other scouts, you read what other people are saying, which players is your opinion, for better or for worse, of any mainstream guys, any name that we probably know?
Yeah.
Where are you an outlier of an opinion relative to conventional wisdom?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, obviously, I think you start with the quarterbacks, because those are the ones that a lot of people are going to see on a weekly basis. They're going to hear about and read about. I came into the year with the idea that Justin Herbert could pass Tua Tagovailoa as the number one quarterback in this draft. I thought upside, skill-wise, you know, I mean, the athleticism, the arm strength, the size, all that stuff, he had that ability. But the more I watched him, and it was funny because actually we talked about Tannehill earlier. That was my comp for him. This was the pre, you know, replacing Mariota Tannehill, that it was just always like a tease in his career, somebody who kind of lets you down a little bit. That was the vibe I got from Justin Herbert. So maybe if we're going to sort of push this thing forward, maybe, Herbert could end up going in the top 10. Is he going to end up being one of my top 10 rated players in this class? No, he's not. And even with a really good first half, you see how conservative they are with him when they get a lead. They don't trust him completely to throw the ball and go win the game and go put a guy out of his, the other team out of commission. So he's somebody that I don't know what my grade's going to end up being, but it's not going to be commensurate with his eventual draft position, which I think is going to be somewhere in the top, 8 or 12 picks. So I'm cooler on him than A, I was coming into the year, and B, than I think a lot of other people are.
I know it's early on in the draft evaluation process, Eric, but
yeah.
Where, positionally speaking, where is this year's draft feeling deep-ish, deeper?
Yep.
What positions? Because Bears fans are looking at the 2 second-round picks they have and thinking, okay, maybe those positions, whichever ones are pretty deep, are the spots where you can get some value.
I think it's going to end up working out pretty well for the Bears in a couple spots. We'll start. I don't know about quarterback because some of these guys may end up coming back to school. Hard to tell on that one.
Sure.
Running back's going to be loaded. I know that doesn't apply to Chicago very much. Wide receiver is going to be one of the best classes in recent memory, even that that Odell class from 5 or 6 years ago. It's going to rile that and be on par maybe with the unbelievable 1996 class. That's how good this group could be. Tight end, not great. Offensive tackle, I think very good. So I think maybe not exceptional, but that's certainly a position that could appeal to the Bears. Interior offensive line, I'm not loving it. What I think could really help, though, is the cornerback spot. You got a decision to make on Prince. There's obviously maybe a depth issue that you want to, explore adding to. Corner is a spot that we could see some starting grade players fall into that day two range. So I think that's another position. Certainly edge rusher, too. They could use another one, depending on what, Floyd and his future is in Chicago and everything. So I think there are some positions that match up pretty nicely with what the Bears currently have. Of course, as you guys know, Pace has been aggressive. They could trade up, so that's all down the road. But, yeah, there's some spots that definitely match up with Bears' needs.
Green Bay was off. Circle back here as we get to the game that's coming up on Sunday. We're going to be doing a whole lot of coverage for it all week long, of course. What questions do you have about Green Bay as they come into this game against the Packers noon on Sunday? I know offensively it's been a mix. I think a mixed bag. Where are you looking for the Green Bay Packers to answer some questions?
I guess I've been sort of asking every time I watch them or every time I sort of see the box scores and I have to see, why is Aaron Jones not getting the ball more? I understand you have this two running back thing that you like and Jamal Williams can maul people and that's an important factor of what they do. I get it. But here's a kind of an established playmaker now. He's had some thrilling moments. There was actually a brief moment this season where we're like, hey, is he better than Christian McCaffrey? Is he an MVP candidate? Okay, that was a little premature, but still, I mean, I feel like he should be a bigger chunk of what they do. Now, maybe there's some ailment or some other reason, picking up pass protection or what have you, or they don't trust his hands in the receiving game. But I'll tell you what, I think he's an electric playmaker, and I'm a little bit shocked that they don't use him more. So, that's one element. Marquez Valdez-Scantling is another guy that I thought could really break out this season, and he's been, for the most part, a real disappointment.
Eric, thank you. I'm glad we could talk.
Thanks, Ben.
Yeah. Sounds good, fellas. See ya.
Eric Edholm of Yahoo Sports, always a valuable football voice. We are keeping our eye on what's going on in the winter meetings, waiting for some transactions to pop out of there, be they Cubs or White Sox related. If something happens, you will hear it as soon as we know it.
Sure. Edholm left us a little bit of a nugget, though. The 1996 draft and wide receiver class, how many of those can you name? Because I had to refresh my memory some. I came up a little empty. That is Keyshawn Johnson, Terry Glenn, Eddie Kennison, Marvin Harrison, Eric Moult, Bobby Engram, T.O., Machine Muhammad, Amani Toomer, Jermaine Lewis, and Joe Horn. All in the same draft.
I will never forgive Eddie Kennison for what he did to me.
What did he do to you?
Ever.
Did he steal a woman from you?
Worse.
What did he... How worse? What'd he do?
All right.
This is getting deep. This is like serious, Dan. This is like pull up a chair, Dan.
Check this out. We're at Bowlerama, the last hurrah for Mike North's charity Bowlerama.
Okay.
And there's like a little holding area for staff and all the celebs that come in. And Jerome Bettis is there. And Eddie Kennison was a kick returner for the Bears at the time.
Sure. LSU wideout.
And I'm eating. That's back before the knee injury, so it was still in my relative fat days. And
great band.
It was early in the morning, and I was having the best grilled cheese and bacon sandwich. Okay,
you were eating carbs before dinner.
I mean, it was like a perfectly done. You know, sometimes you get like a really well managed bowling alley grill where the food's just ideal. Oh, yeah. There's actually Waveland Bowl.
That place is great.
There's a great burger at Waveland Bowl. I kid you not. It's Alley Dogs. Their food is fantastic there. All the kids are getting pizza. Like, get the burger. They toast the bun and everything. I'm telling you. So I'm having this fantastic grilled cheese with bacon, big strips of bacon on it, gooey cheese dripping out the side of my mouth. And I've got about a quarter of the sandwich left. And I put it up to my mouth, and out of nowhere, a hand grabs the remaining sandwich.
No.
Out of my hand. And it's Eddie Kennison.
No.
He, like, as I'm biting it, he takes it and he stuffs the remaining quarter of the sandwich in his mouth.
That's cold. That is cold.
I looked at him just aghast. And he's laughing. And he said, "You know what we call that?" He said, "That's called getting done up Louisiana style."
Oh, come on, man.
And like, that was the... Like, that's not funny.
How do you take the last corner of a man's sandwich?
That sandwich at that time, it's like all I cared about in the world. I mean, I don't have any kids.
Did you have a relationship with the guy?
No,
did you know
I never
enough?
Met him.
Oh, that I kind of respect it.
I mean, just a random
that
dude.
Is cold.
Like he, like I, and I'm the same guy who on the Boris and Bernstein Who Needs Two Tavern Tour. I said, if you are eating a plate of wings, because look, my name's on the event, I'm taking a wing. I'm
prima nocta for the wings.
It's like tithing or something, right? It's not your weight in gold,
but at least you've announced it.
I told people I would do that because I just said I would.
Yeah, but
I don't know the guy. I mean, where does that rank? The brazenness of that. The sheer brazenness of that. And then he just smiles and says, did you have Louisiana style? I mean,
man.
Dude.
I was unaware of that the sandwich stealing was part of Louisiana culture. I had no idea.
It's never happened to me. The many times I've been in Louisiana,
that is worse. It's worse. That's
seriously
worse. That's one of the coldest things a man can do to one of the men.
What kind of person does that to somebody? Damn, Eddie Kennison.
Wow, that is bad. I didn't mean to take you to this dark a place so early in the morning. I'm sorry. I mean, really, Eddie should be sorry. We got to find. But that's what we got to do. Jay, can we reach out to Eddie Kennison and see if we can book like a forgiveness tour, like a conversation where we really
nothing
just kind of hash things out.
I will never get that bite of that sandwich back.
It's gone.
I will never get that.
It's gone.
At least you're over it.
I'm like,
and you're asking me why I'm menu planning for a Thursday night on a Monday.
I don't know if I want him around me. I might have some Cheetos in front of me, and he's going to take that last one.
Take him. He's just going to take him.
Phone interview only. It's the only thing I'll want.
Oh, yeah. We can't have him in. No, we can't have him in.
Like,
or so we do have
we
him
can
in.
Do that now? Well, I mean, Eddie Kennison said it's just Louisiana style.
Well, maybe we do have him in. We have a big like grilled cheese platter. And just see what he does with it?
Or we strategically each have one, but start eating them at different times and see if he notices and grabs each of our sandwiches?
I didn't want to think about that.
There are a lot of people texting that you have stolen wings from them at a Who Needs Two.
Yes, but it's not stealing. That's my rightful share.
That's right. You liberated those wings off the plate. No.
Just because you're the host of the show doesn't mean you own the restaurant, Dan.
No, I
host doesn't mean rightful bag.
One wing. It's just one. Except when we were at I forgot what the name of the place was. It was where the Starbucks is, the old Harry Carey's on Sheffield. You know, the big marquee storefront
It
was one of the incarnations of a restaurant. And this guy was bragging about how he's going to get the ghost pepper wings. He's like, yeah, I'm a champion eater. Nothing can hold me. And the moment the server came out with the plate, like she's averting her gaze, the entire restaurant went, oh, my God, what is that? It was like we'd all been pepper sprayed.
Yeah.
They set him down in front of him. He didn't finish one single wing. He ran the old single wing on him, and he had he left. Like, we were going to call an ambulance. So I was like, I got to go home. There's like two bites of one wing on this plate of wings. Like, I got to go home.
There's Gerard, no how was the point Hootie doing heat challenges. Yeah. Heat challenges are stupid.
Oh, it's, no, they're – oh, God.
Because like, you might as well pepper spray yourself. That's what right. It is.
Yeah, it's like when they have to wear a mask –
to like deliver the food.
Breathing mask to make or deliver the food.
You're signing a waiver. Idiots. They're making you sign a waiver.
Pass. Hard pass.
Also, it's not even like you're getting more of whatever it is. You're just getting a more painful version of it. So why?
Right. I never understood that. I never said, like, hey, you want our wings super crazy, blow your ass out? Like, no. I just want medium.
I've been maced and pepper sprayed. I don't need it.
Yeah, I always felt bad on the man versus food. That, like, you could tell he didn't want to do those, but they kind of felt required to do them every once in a while.
Yep, exactly right. Ugh. This segment brought to you by the Exergen Temporal Scanner. Experts are predicting a brutal cold and flu season. The number one flu season symptom is fever. So use a thermometer proven accurate by more than 80 clinical studies. We can't always predict the flu season, but we can always prepare for it with the Exergen Temporal Scanner, exergen.com. I can't wait for the Midday Midway. I know it's in a little bit. I know we just made this a pretty long segment. I've got a story that is, it's so you, and I hope you haven't seen it.
All right.
Because I can't wait to spring this on.
Excellent. We get that coming up at 10:40. You want to set the stage a little bit baseball-wise? Because we got Sahadev Sharma coming up at 11. But there's a couple of things that have popped up this morning, and as we've been doing the show and talking a lot of football.
Yeah, definitely.
That I think are going to come into play for both the Cubs and the White Sox. We'll talk a little baseball on the other side of things and what I think you're going to look at expecting for both teams on either side of town at midday, midway at 10:40, Sahadev Sharma at 11. It's Bernstein McKnight on the score.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station.
Oh, stop it. Stop it, Nick.
It's not that. I've got a little Mark Gonzalez in me.
It's deluxe. That's what it is. It's deluxe. One of the things I loved about working the gig and being around baseball as much as I was is that you got to know some of the sports writers that have been in places before and been in a couple of different places. Gonzo introduced me to the term when appraising pitching talent, right? Mm-hmm. Like the guy has a deluxe fastball, a deluxe. I'd never heard that used
in
like
scouting reports.
Yeah, it's deluxe. And I've always really appreciated that he doesn't give up on some of the older scouting language when we've got so many new scouting languages coming up, spin rates and all that kind of, nonsense. And then there's
free
the Astros
easy, max
cheating
effort.
And yeah, all that stuff. I love it. I absolutely love it.
This bottom of the hour is brought to you by the Chicago Wolves. You want to sign a one-day contract with the Chicago Wolves and earn a $5,000 signing bonus? Visit Sprint on Rand Road in Arlington Heights between 1 and 3 p.m. Saturday for your chance to win. You've been looking at some of the dribs and drabs news that is trickling out of the winter meetings.
Couple of things here and there. I just find it very interesting to get ourselves set up this winter meetings, as we've had more action prior to the winter meetings than we have had in the last two, three seasons. If you caught it in Joe O's update here the last hour or so. It sounds like the Cubs are less likely to engage on Nick Castellanos than it seemed prior.
The way it was phrased, I've always gotten a kick out of this phrasing. They said that they would need to clear some salary before engaging in serious negotiations.
Right.
Which I picture well. However, we will do silly negotiations.
Oh, absolutely.
Serious negotiations, no. Silly negotiations with these spraying seltzer bottles and the giant pants and floppy shoes. Oh, there will be plenty of that.
Jed loves doing those negotiations. Yep. Just giant shoes and these suspenders and everything.
Honk, honk,
really a big fan of those.
Yep.
Theo, not so much. Doesn't show up for those. But I do think this, and I saw this tweeted by our guy, Matt Trueblood. I think it was Sunday or something like that. If that's the case, and for a long time, we'll talk to Sahadev Sharma at 11 about this too, and he's been writing this up for a while. The Cubs are trying to clear money. That just seems evident. It's clear, regardless of what signal you're reading, whether it's Theo's, Jed's, national reports, local reporters, the moves that are all getting kind of tossed around here, the idea seems to be a concerted effort to clear some salary. Name for me some of the big numbers that you could actually see traded.
That you could see?
Those are guys like, yeah, I mean, because nobody's taking John Lester's $20 million.
And Wilson Contreras isn't a big number.
He's $5 million and controllable for 3 years. No one, I mean, raise your hand if you want Tyler Chatwood for 13. Nobody? Okay.
Anyone?
I'll move down the line. So those big money guys are Chris Bryant.
Hayward. But he's got
Anthony Rizzo.
Language, though.
And Javi Baez.
You're not moving Darvish?
So if you have to get rid of money, those are guys attached to big money. If you're getting rid of any one of those guys and bringing back something like Nick Castellanos, if you're bringing back, you know, that will be underwhelming to a vast majority of Cubs fans. Not only because you've got to take the psychic hit of losing one of the guys that helped win you a World Series in 2016.
You need to steel yourself for that.
But I think you're going to have to.
Yeah, you need to.
But you can't also...
Come on, Addison Russell helped you win a World Series in 2016.
No, I understand that, but he's not a good baseball player
but
either.
But I'm just saying, the idea of understanding in modern baseball, most fans know that you can't be romantic about some of this if you're trying to win the next World Series.
Right, but that's the next step of this. If you're moving one of those guys and trying to win in 2020... That's just a bunch of kicks. That's just a whole lot that's brutal.
It's going to be. This is going to be the reckoning, whether Theo likes the word or not. He's going to get himself to his reckoning.
It will cost him. It may.
That's part of it.
It may cost him.
The reckoning is part. It's his too.
And I don't mean his reputation or his. It's going to cost this franchise quite a bit.
Yep.
I mean, but teams don't part with top-tier prospects that often
anymore.
They got here.
They brought it on themselves. They got here. They underperformed.
You're saying develop a pitcher at some point in 10 years?
Yeah.
Do something like that?
They got here. They've earned every bit of a painful reckoning. Or ownership could just spend whatever it wants and be in the tax and stop pretending that they don't have the money.
I'm not hearing that.
Right?
I don't think that's happening.
I don't think it's happening either.
They're dipping tax twice.
We can't ignore that it's absolutely... They could spend whatever they wanted to make the pain less.
Had you read... Okay, so Marvin Miller gets into the Baseball Hall of Fame.
Ted Simmons into the Baseball Hall of Fame.
Fantastic stuff, right? Marvin Miller was the leader of the Players Association. His free agency came around in its infancy, helped shepherd the Curt Flood thing, all that stuff, right? Miller was one of the guys, up until the day he died, who was decrying the idea of a luxury tax in baseball.
Mm-hmm.
Knowing what that would do to the sport, knowing that ownerships,
it's a salary cap,
plural, would just use it as the salary cap, regardless of what the penalties were or weren't. They were just going to say, well, we can't, how could we possibly have this happen to our ball club when no one else is going to have this happen to their ball club? It's like $6 million. Are you really that? Oh, six, we can't possibly give up another $6 million to sign this guy who's going to get us another 3 wins and potentially another round in the playoffs or whatever. Couldn't possibly. Marvin Miller, there you go. Again, well, he should have been in the Hall of Fame decades ago. Mm-hmm. Decades ago. But at least he gave you the prescient outlook of knowing that a luxury tax was going to kneecap this sport.
The midday midway is coming up. I have a fantastic list that is not funny. except it's hilarious. Okay, it's not funny. Okay. It's not funny until it gets really funny, and it's going to hit home with you.
Tales of a nuclear reactor here in the United States, and we'll also talk about when cocaine wasn't your cocaine. It's okay. A Florida story. I can't wait. The Midday Midway's on the way. Bernstein and McKnight, 670 The Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. Chicago Sports Station.
The first half or the second half, you know, it's they're two equal times.
Now, Midway.
The Midday Midway.
One, two.
Midway, the most important of the year.
Three, four.
The most exciting thing on the Midway.
Five, six, seven, eight.
Our objective is Midway.
9, 10.
You guys gotta meet me halfway out there.
So real, you can almost feel it.
The Midday Midway with Bernstein and McKnight on The Score.
The Midday Midway is brought to you by New Mail Medical Center. Discover the new you, newmailmedical.com. We tried to put the weekend of NFL outcomes in context, and I'm thinking of this Bears-Packers week as if this is a playoff game. Every game matters. The Bears have to win out. Lose if you go home.
October is in May.
Right. That's what I'm doing. And this, so that for the Bears to be material, I'm going to make this feel like the playoffs, so you can join me there if you want as we work toward our big Kenosha Subaru event that is taking place at the Brat Stop on Friday and the high treason that could occur Thursday as well. You know, we're going to stay out of our way at that
point. High treason, light debauchery, or light treason, high debauchery. Could be either way.
It could be every single bit of it. But Eric Edholm helped us out with some stuff, and we discussed baseball and what is going to be happening, we think, at the winter meetings.
More baseball conversation with Sahad of Sharma at 11, but the Midday Midway is now. I saw this a couple of weeks ago and quite frankly forgot about it, and I'm glad I found it again. I'm one of the guys who has like 95 browser windows open on the phone, just like keeping it. So I'm scrolling through. I'm like, oh, I forgot to do this for the Midday. A Florida motorist who had a open 38-ounce can of Budweiser in his car door reportedly told police that the crack cocaine they also found in his vehicle must have come through an act of nature. Zach Joseph, according to an affidavit posted on the Smoking Gun, said the wind must have placed it there.
The wind
must have placed it there. When Fort Pierce cops found cocaine residue in his car, he also theorized the police had planted
it. It is Florida, though.
Yes, it's Florida. He also theorized the police had planted it, which was found alongside what appeared to be a pipe. The East Florida cops reportedly said the 37-year-old man had earlier been spotted drinking in his car in a hotel parking lot. Officers say the hotel where he was hanging out is a hotbed for drugs and prostitution.
Mm.
But if the wind blew it into his car, possession is still 9/10 of the law. I mean, it's kind of going to still be on him, is it not?
Either it's there or it's not there, right?
That's how I understand it.
It would be on you if the wind blew it in to get it out.
I would think that's the case. Not by ingesting it either.
Okay, so this really is not funny. 24/7 Wall Street has released an annual ranking of the nation's drunkest cities. And how do they find this out? The report looked at the percentage of adults drinking excessively, percentage of driving deaths involving alcohol, the number of premature deaths, and the median household income.
All right.
Okay. So, not funny.
No.
I'm going to remind you, this is not funny.
Stop laughing.
Stop laughing, because this is not funny. I'm going to start at 20, and we're going to get to 1.
Oh, no.
Okay?
Yeah.
Number 20 is Corvallis, Oregon. Number 19, Iowa City, Iowa. Number 18... it moved with Fred Hoiberg, Lincoln, Nebraska.
Okay.
Number 17 is the metropolitan area of Milwaukee, Waukesha, West Allis, Wisconsin. Number 16, the Janesville-Beloit corridor of Wisconsin.
Oh, God, that hellhole.
Number 15, Racine, Wisconsin.
Hmm.
14, Grand Forks, North Dakota. 13, Missoula, Montana. Number 12... Sheboygan, Wisconsin.
I think I know what's happening here.
Number 11 is Wausau, Wisconsin.
Oh, no.
Number 10 is Mankato and North Mankato, Minnesota.
Sure it is.
Number nine. We're the top 10 now of drunkest cities based on all of this harrowing data. Number nine, Eau Claire, Wisconsin.
Sure.
Number eight, Ames, Iowa. Number seven, Fond du Lac, Wisconsin.
Yep.
Number six, La Crosse / Onalaska, Wisconsin. Number five, Fargo, North Dakota.
Oh, thank God. Oh, it's nice to get out of the list for a little bit.
This is so delicious. Number four on the list of drunkest cities, Madison, Wisconsin.
Of course it is.
Number three, Green Bay, Wisconsin.
Yeah, that sounds right.
Number two, Oshkosh, Neenah, Wisconsin.
Yep.
Home of the Foundry. The number one drunkest city based on adults drinking excessively, percentage of driving deaths involving alcohol, and number of premature deaths and median household income. Congratulations to Appleton, Wisconsin.
Yeah. I have, you know, I was keeping score too when you said Corvallis early on. I have lived in or been drunk in 15 of those 20 towns.
Let me see how many I have.
15 of 20.
One, two.
If you're white and it's cold, you're drunk a lot.
Three. And you made one trip to Corvallis, Oregon.
Or worked in the Midwest League.
Three,
four.
Oh my God, that is the Midwest League. Yeah. That's five, the Midwest six, League.
Seven, eight.
Oh boy!
I've eight. And that's not quite half for me. But,
that is sober.
that is, as they say.
Actually, it's kind of not.
Yeah, that would be sober. That's Connor McKnight. This is your life.
It's dry humor and a sobering list. Yeah. So I saw. You know how much I love local news, right? And kind of the nonsense that is local news at times. I found this. I don't know how. I was clicking through on Twitter. It's from Columbus, Ohio, about a week and a half ago. And I have been refreshing it over the last couple of days to see. It's just like a live police feed, right? With updates as we go. And it caught my eye because of the very first breaking news thing. So I'm just going to read this the way I discovered it, right? With the first breaking news, you know, little graph tweet sort of thing. Mm-hmm. And then the subsequent updates over the next couple of days. Here's the first. This is from News Breaking Live. It's Columbus, Ohio. Emergency crews are currently investigating a report of a possible small nuclear reactor inside a residential garage in Columbus, Ohio, the Columbus Dispatch reports. Bomb squad have reportedly been called to the scene. Hazmat crews have been called. Chippenhook Court has reportedly been evacuated. It's a shopping mall. As crews investigate the report, Battalion Chief Steve Martin, the Columbus Division of Fire spokesman,
the arrow through the head of the banjo,
is reportedly en route to the scene. No further details have been given.
Excuse me.
We will provide more information as becomes available. So I saw this and I thought, oh, this is, what the hell?
How does the report originate?
So I, like that.
But by the way, you know what's that over is here? A nuclear reactor and Bigfoot.
The first update was about 6 hours later. Update. Columbus Fire Chief Steve Martin says hazmat and bomb
squad. Says he's a wild and crazy guy.
Says hazmat and bomb squad crews responded to a residence in the area around 6 p.m. He added that authorities were responding to an unconfirmed report that someone building a nuclear device claimed they were injured. Day later, update number two. WSYX-TV reports that a resident was working on a, quote, quantum physics generator at his home and was burned. The type of burns caused confusion among first responders, prompting a precautionary evacuation of 40 homes. Teams have not picked up any radiation at this time, but are continuing their investigation. Finally, the third update, and this is like a week later. The man reportedly told the bomb squad that he sustained radio frequency burns, whatever the hell those are, while working on a, quote, quantum physics generator in his garage.
So this is a, quote, crazy person.
Battalion Chief Steve Martin told the Columbus Dispatch, we have no reason to believe that he was
so funky.
We have no reason to believe that he was trying to make anything that would do anyone harm.
And we think he might be a crazy person.
What in the name of God?
But when it gets to evacuating 40 homes because the guy has... by the way, the idea of radio burns...
What?
Oh, yeah. This show could cause them. Just flay your skin right off of you. This segment especially has been known to cause severe radio burns.
It's like a Rick and Morty episode, this thing. It was just ridiculous.
That is the Midday Midway. We don't usually do it on Mondays, but we can do it today because we're, even though we're tough, it's not a Bears Monday, technically. Sahadev Sharma is in the winter meetings. He's at, I don't know if he's in. He's at the winter meetings.
Could be in.
Could be in, could be at. Either way, he's going to tell us what's going on. Cubs, Sox, baseball, all of it. Next on The Score.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
O'Reilly Auto Parts.